In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
A quick refresher on the leader of Canada's New Democrat Party. This was just 16 months ago.
History has been made today with the NDP electing Jagmeet Singh as their next party leader. He becomes the first person of color to lead a federal party and, of course, the first Sikh man to wear a turban to do so.
Jagmeet Singh is an inspiring figure. Aside from breaking down barriers, he's well known for sharp suits. He has 203,000 followers on Instagram. He rides a sweet bicycle and practices Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And at the time he assumed the leadership, he really did seem like the NDP answer to Justin Trudeau. That was then, however. Right now, Singh is finally within reach of a seat in the House of Commons. He's running in a by-election in BC, where the NDP is the favorite to win on February 25th. Meanwhile, the federal Liberals are enmeshed in scandal after scandal, so the door should be wide open for Singh and his party. And somehow it's all going wrong, live on television.
The ambassador from China accused Canada of, quote, white supremacy. If you were the prime minister, what would you say to the Chinese right now?
Sorry, who accused who of white supremacy?
Can you tell us whether or not your caucus is behind you in supporting this bill?
At this point, I'm. You know, just give me a moment. I have to clarify. Do we know where I'm at? Yeah. So yes, right now our caucus is in support of this bill.
Singh has made a habit the past few weeks of appearing unprepared on major issues of foreign policy. And with the by-election less than 2 weeks away, he's facing critical questions. First, can he hang on for what should be an easy NDP win? If he doesn't, will he be forced out as leader? Why has he been so defined by his recent gaffes, and how can he fix that image in time to make a dent in this fall's election? He needs answers to all those questions, and better ones than he gave on TV, and he needs them now. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. David Moskrop is one of our favorite political analysts. He is the author of the forthcoming Too Dumb for Democracy, Why We Make Bad Political Decisions and How We Can Make Better Ones. Tell me how 2019 has gone so far for NDP leader Jagmeet Singh.
I'm going to say C minus.
Okay.
Not great. But this isn't a great start for him. It's been a bit of a mess. But the NDP isn't traditionally known for great starts, and they're hovering more or less about where you'd expect them to be in the polls, historically speaking. So it only looks bad because they came so close to winning in 2015, and so the expectations were unusually high for them, which is making this look all the worse. I mean, it's bad, but it looks worse because of sort of recent context.
Explain what looks so bad. Give us an overview, because a lot of people, I think, have seen headlines but don't actually know what's going on.
So there are basic issues, like it seems to be the case that sometimes he doesn't know what his party positions are. There was a press conference last year where in the middle of it he had to turn to another NDP MP, Guy Caron, and ask him to confirm a party position. And then he was doing a hit on, I think, CTV and hadn't read or heard of a particularly current story about China. And then the Venezuela crisis hit, and it seemed to be the case that his foreign affairs critic, and as well as Nikki Ashton, were driving the party policy, and he was out of step with that. So it sort of looks like he just doesn't have the office together and he can't control the caucus, which could be reflective of an internal power dynamic, or it could be, as is often the case in politics, a case of disorganization and light to medium incompetence.
But this is like the crucial time. I mean, we have his by-election for his seat in less than 2 weeks.
Yes, and if he doesn't win, well, we can get into that, and if he doesn't win, the stakes may be very, very high for him. I think he will manage to pull it off, in part because by-elections tend to go against the government. The riding is easily an NDP win. It was a close one in the last election. The news cycle right now, the SNC-Lavalin affair and the resignation of Jody Wilson-Raybould from cabinet, is not favorable for the Liberals, so that's going to drag them down a little bit probably. So he'll probably win, but the timing is quite bad for Singh to be flopping around as much as he is a year in, as well as managing stories about how a number of his sort of senior NDP MPs aren't going to be running again, which isn't exactly a vote of confidence in his leadership. So the stakes are high, and they haven't really been able to put it together yet. But luckily for him, the Liberals are scoring some own goals right now, so that might help.
Right, and that's why we wanted to talk to you, because I feel like since Andrew Scheer became the leader of the Conservative Party, it's been Trudeau versus Scheer for the 2019 election. And of course, the NDP flies under the radar as always. But this is the time when the Liberals seem as vulnerable as they're ever going to be, and Singh has a public profile right now courtesy of this by-election. What needs to happen right now to make the NDP relevant in October, essentially?
I don't know. To be honest, the NDP has been caught in this challenging spot for much of their history, and it's that Canada is typically sort of a center-right country. You know, to the extent that we move towards class consciousness or social democracy from time to time, the Liberals tend to hog up that space. They treat the NDP as a bit of a farm team and recruit their policies from there. And so the Liberals are so good at pivoting to the left and governing to the right that they block out the NDP fairly often. And you'll recall that when the NDP did so well in the lead up to 2015, the NDP doing well was as much about Michael Ignatieff and Stéphane Dion being poor leaders as it was about Jack Layton or Thomas Mulcair being good leaders. And so the question then is, well, what point does the NDP serve if it wants to govern, if it wants to be more than just a policy farm for the Liberals? I think your best bet is to go hard left and to run the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez campaign, the Bernie Sanders campaign, even the Jeremy Corbyn campaign, of a deep social democracy, even socialist party, because otherwise you're a pale imitation of the Liberals, and you know, if you want that, you're going to vote for the Liberals, unless you're particularly disgusted with them.
Well, it seems like this is the same kind of circumstances that gave root to the NDP's rise pre-2015, right? A weakened party, people who should theoretically be more amenable to their message and their leader, but it doesn't seem to be happening, unless I'm missing something.
No, I don't think it does, and you know, the Liberals, even if this SNC-Lavalin thing picks up, I mean, people are trying to make a parallel with the sponsorship scandal, and maybe it'll go there, but that took a long time in the late 90s and early 2000s. And when the Liberals were eventually replaced, the Paul Martin Liberals, that was because, in part because of the sponsorship scandal and the fact the Gomery Inquiry kept in the news for so long, but also because the Liberals have been in power for over a decade and people were just sick of them. Most people aren't sick of the Trudeau Liberals yet, and Justin Trudeau is far better than Michael Ignatieff was and Stéphane Dion was, and for that matter, Paul Martin. So the Liberals remain pretty strong, and Singh remains pretty weak and disorganized. That might change over the next couple of years.
You know,
he'll get his office together, he'll get his staff together, but it'll take time. And keep in mind that right now, it's also not helping him that there's an NDP government in Alberta, there's an NDP government in British Columbia. There's a lot of talent that's off the federal bench and headed off to those other sides, right? And so putting an office together is not as easy as it would be if there wasn't two NDP governments that's attracting a lot of good folks.
I'm really interested in sort of the image of a party leader, because as soon as these two or three missteps that you mentioned came out, there was immediately kind of a rush to paint Singh a certain way. What happens when a politician gets a couple of those gaffes that just seem to stick to them? And how badly, how long does that stick?
Well, if you mention the name Robert Stanfield, there's a famous photo of him on the tarmac dropping a football. And he's sort of remembered as this sort of gaffe-prone politician who couldn't catch a football. Never mind that he'd actually been catching spirals previous to that moment, but that
right.
Sort of encapsulated Stanfield. Think of Gerald Ford falling down the stairs from Air Force One. I mean, these things, those are visual representations, but you can think of gaffes, George W. Bush in traditional, I think, Chinese dress, trying to open a prop door that wouldn't open, right? You know, these things tend to define you because they stick out in people's minds, and they linger for a long time. So especially, and this is, I think, part of particularly dangerous for Singh, especially if the expectations are that you will do better and that you're better than that, right? So I do think it does a lot of harm for him. Remember when he was running and when he was elected as NDP leader, he was billed as a sort of urbane, charming, you know, answer, social democratic answer to Trudeau, you know, with the Tom Ford suits and the custom bikes and the BMW.
Yeah, he was on Instagram. Well, he still is.
Well, exactly. And he had a spread in what was, I can't remember what it was, Vanity Fair, Esquire,
it was GQ.
Something like that. And GQ, that's right. And, you know, I read them all. They all just jumble together at the end of the day. So the expectation was that he was going to come in and he was going to be witty and sleek and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then he came in and kind of looked like a bumbling fool. So it was as much about failing to live up to extraordinarily high expectations as it was anything else. But that was friendly fire. You know, they were the ones who built up that image in the first place because they thought it would be politically useful. That, of course, is the inverse of Justin Trudeau, who started out with the image of a sort of bumbling neophyte who had no idea what he was doing, who was silly and out of place, and whose expectations were therefore very, very low. And then in 2015, he really showed up because he had grown. So, you know, there are different ways to play it. Hasn't served the NDP particularly well so far.
Yeah, so how do you play it? You're an NDP advisor. You've got a week and a half left before the vote. What do you do with Mr. Singh? Do you challenge somebody to a boxing match? I mean, that turned Trudeau around, right? An intellectual policy boxing match, to be clear, because that's where he needs to make his hay right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're talking about the by-election, the thing that you do is you go knock on every door in Burnaby South five times, and then you mention SNC-Lavalin, Trudeau, and corruption, and then pick, you know, hey, remember the trip to India, remember the Aga Khan, remember them lying about electoral reform, you know, you do the greatest hits, and you do it retail door to door. And then, so that's how you lock that down, because I do think it remains advantage NDP. And again, this massive Liberal own goal on SNC-Lavalin and Jody Wilson-Raybould is a gift to the NDP, because all those stories, which included, by the way, former NDP leader Thomas Mulcair going on television and trashing his former party as a political pundit. All those stories are now off the radar, and we're paying attention to scandals in the Liberal Party and the Liberal government. Scandals in the Liberal government, I should say. So, you know, that's a massive gift to the NDP. So I think they'll lock down Burnaby South. But then the question is, okay, well, then how do you win the 2019 election? I don't think they do. But how do they outperform expectations? I think they got to run full guns to the left.
Is there a sense within the NDP that this by-election decides Jagmeet Singh's future as leader?
Yeah, I think so. And Thomas Mulcair on television, in fact, has sort of indicated that it was going to be a real test of his leadership and it'd be hard for him to go on if he didn't. And then there was a story suggesting that, you know, Singh had been told by senior NDP MPs that if he lost the Burnaby by-election, he'd have to shuffle off. So I do think if he loses, he'll have to go or face some defections in his party. And if he wins, he'll get a reprieve and get a couple of years to put his party back together. You know, keep in mind, for years and years and years, the NDP wouldn't turf a leader for not winning an election, right? They sat through years of Ajit McLaughlin, years of Alexa McDonough, years of Jack Layton, and the expectation wasn't to win or even to grow the seat count that much. So I think they'll go back to that historical baseline, I think. But Singh has to win the by-election first, because, you know, he's got to pass one of these tests or otherwise they're going to bounce him. And this is the critical one.
In the bigger picture, given that every time we talk politics on this podcast, it ends up coming around to polarization and both sides sort of settling into their camps. In the big picture, what's the future for the NDP? I mean, I know a lot of people who are probably just going to hold their nose and vote Liberal because it's a choice between left and right now.
Yeah, and barring institutional change, so for instance, electoral reform, which would change the equation, that strategic choice is going to remain, I think, pretty common, and it'll be tough for the NDP to break through. We might get to a point where there's an awakening of class consciousness and people go left, but that doesn't seem to be on the horizon. I mean, there's no reason to believe that anything is going to change between this left-right dynamic that we've seen more or less since 1867. But that shouldn't stop the NDP from trying to find some way to break it up, whether it's running a different sort of campaign, advocating for different sorts of policies, or pushing for institutional reforms that they think are good for them. I mean, every party to some extent does that. But I don't think it's going to happen organically. It's just the country is a 2.5 party system, more or less, and it has been for a long time.
Does that get worse as polarization increases?
Well, it's hard to know. I mean, it depends on what sort of polarization you're talking about. Our institutions are pretty good at managing that, certainly better than other countries. It's not a two-party system in the way the U.S. is. And what's interesting in the U.S., that polarization in the two-party system is driven actually by a fairly small percentage of people. One study suggests about 14% of voters are polarized, give or take, something like that. So it's not like 50-50. It's a minority of people who are driving those parties apart. But in Canada, that number is probably driven by the same percentage or even less. Partisanship isn't going to go anywhere. Polarization might sort of push people at the margins, but it hasn't become a central problem here yet. And you'll probably find it closer to things like the People's Party of Canada more than the Liberals and the Conservatives. So far, we're holding out. It doesn't mean we should be complacent, but it does mean that it hasn't reached this critical breaking point like it has in the United States.
When you look at the NDP a year from now, is Jagmeet Singh still leading the party?
My gut says yeah. I do think he'll win in Burnaby.
That's really interesting.
He'll stay on.
There's so much talk right now about how he doesn't have much of a future with this party. I mean, that's why we wanted to talk to you. So I'm kind of fascinated that you seem pretty convinced he's solid right now.
Well, I don't think he's solid. I mean, I just think that if we think about this historically, the NDP isn't doing much worse than you'd expect them to do. He'll get some time to put it together. And there isn't an heir apparent pushing on him like there would have been if this were the Liberals and Chrétien Martin. And a lot of MPs are moving on, people who might be leadership contenders. And I don't think they'll sit out this election and then come back 6 months from now and then challenge him for the leadership. And I think he'll get the office together, Singh. He'll get some folks in positions where they need to be, and he'll improve. And that's point one. Point two is expectations will also start to level out. Because now, so if the problem initially was, in part, he started with expectations that were too high, now his expectations are low, right? They're around his ankles. So all he has to do is not trip over that very, very low bar, and he should be okay. So, my gut says he'll be around in a year. Will he be around in 5 years? I don't know, but certainly a year from now.
David Moskrop, writer, political analyst, author. Go get his book, Too Dumb for Democracy. That was The Big Story. For more from us, hit us up at thebigstorypodcast.ca or at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. Find us on social media at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter, at FrequencyPods on Twitter, and at FrequencyPods on Facebook. You can find us and subscribe for free. And you can tell your friends to do the same thing wherever they get podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on your favorite app. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.